You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we're gonna walk it out.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to WOLB 1010 AM Talk Radio. This is Carol Mileta bringing you another episode of Parenting 411, where we bring you information parents need from sources they can trust. I've got a timely topic for you today as families wrap up those summer vacations and prepare to send children back to school. For children who are too young to enroll in school, parents who work outside the home are weighing daycare options. Very often, mothers take the lead on this. They figure all this out. So the topic of today's discussion is cracking the code on child care. What's a working mom to do? We are finding numerous studies that reveal that child care is indeed top of mind for our nation's families with young children. For example, the National Mothers Education Support and Advocacy Organization, American Mothers Incorporated, conducted a survey ahead of its national convention last spring, asking mothers across the country to name their top three concerns. Affordable child care was cited repeatedly among those top three concerns. An analysis by the Center for American Progress examined this issue and revealed that families in our country with children under five spent about $250 a week on child care last year. This expense is estimated to be about 10% of the average family's monthly income of $10,981. The report goes further to say that child care can often amount to a family's largest monthly household expense, exceeding even rent or a mortgage in some cases. Other factors putting the squeeze on the family budget include exorbitant student loans and elder care, as we find that families are taking on some costs of care for their parents, even as they are raising young children. Now, aside from cost, there is the problem of demand exceeding supply in the child care market. In some areas of the country, there simply are not enough licensed child care providers available to meet this demand. These conditions have many families weighing whether they can afford to have both parents working or whether they should have one parent home with the children. Families or single parents who rule out the stay-at-home option know that they will have to make considerable sacrifices in other areas, perhaps postponing home ownership or just other extras that families might enjoy. Today, we are going to look at a model that was implemented with success by today's guest, Susan Tatsui Darcy. Hopefully, you caught my last show with our discussion about the college application process, where we introduced Project Merit, an excellent way for students to differentiate themselves by completing a meaningful project which demonstrates their passions, interests, strengths, and talents in an impactful way. Susan is back with another innovative idea, the Millennial's Guide to Free Childcare in Your Home. Susan is an educator, college advisor, and author. As I shared, I met Susan at the National Convention of American Mothers Incorporated, where she represented the state of California as the 2019 Mother of the Year, just as I represented the District of Columbia as the Mother of the Year for 2019. Since 1979, Susan has been putting her creative talents to work in education and writing for the creation of instructional programs and schools, including a day camp, professional tutoring program, a private K-12 school, and an educational consulting group. She has written on numerous topics, including education and time management. So thank you so much for joining me again today, Susan.
Thank you for having me, Carol.
Yes. So how's the weather out there for you?
It's beautiful. It's Labor Day weekend and everybody's coming to Santa Cruz.
Okay.
That's where I live. So I'm actually leaving town today because all the tourists come into town for the last hurrah for summer here.
Oh, okay. Well, we're having our last hurrah for summer here on the East Coast as well, but we're also bracing for a storm in some areas. So, or you know, certainly down in Florida and places like that. So anyway, hopefully it will turn out okay and people are will be prepared and people will be safe. So I'm excited about today's topic because I just think it's something that families all over the country are wrestling with. And before we dive in, though, I wanted you to tell our listeners a bit about yourself and your professional background.
Okay, I'm an educator and a college advisor by trade. I'm also an activist. I love to pick up on issues and help my students go out and do things. Those are my college advisory students. So that's my background and my foundation. And I've written several books, 12 books, and one of them is this book that we're talking about today, The Millennial's Guide to Free Childcare in Your Home, where I help parents assess their needs and figure out what they want to do in terms of child care for their children so that they can do this for free. And that's what we're talking about today.
Now,
I'm also, should I give more information? I'm also married and I have two children, but they're adults. I've got Nicole, who's 34 years old. She's an ER doctor here in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. And my youngest daughter is 30 and she lives in Chicago. She just graduated from Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management and just got a great position just in a startup called Lumiere, and she's a sales enablement manager there.
Oh, okay. That sounds awesome. Well, let's talk then about how you came up with the idea of creating an in-home daycare program for your first child.
Okay. Well, I originally back in, she was born in 85. That seems like so long ago. Mm-hmm. So I hired a babysitter, which is what everybody did back then. You either put your kids, either had a family member who was nearby or you got a babysitter. So I had a babysitter and I'd go off to work and I'd come back and ask how things went. And she'd say, well, we read books. I'm thinking, okay, well, you're there for 8 hours. How many books did you read? And she said, well, we read 4 books and we watched some TV shows. And that made me crazy. Just when I heard that, thinking that my brilliant daughter, of course, everybody thinks their kids are brilliant. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking she was, you know, 2.5 years old and she sat in front of the television all day. So of course that night I just tossed and turned and finally just put the light on and just went to my office desk and sat down and said, we need to change this. And, you know, being an educator, I'm thinking, well, I wonder if I can have her do some academic things. She's only 2.5, but can she learn what a letter sounds? You know, her ABCs and the sounds that letters make. So I created a curriculum and laid it all out and figured, well, her attention span is about 10 seconds. You know, so I laid out a lot of different activities that I thought she would enjoy, you know, fun things or finger painting and doing science projects or going out and, you know, playing in the park and doing gymnastics and rolling balls and just everything that a 2.5-year-old loves to do. And I laid it all out and I realized there's plenty of room to add in a little academics. So I created a balance between academics and developmental things and made a program that she can do in 4 hours. And I presented it to the babysitter who happened to bring her daughter along, who was also the same age as Nicole. So it was great. We had 2 2.5-year-olds. And she embraced it. She said, wow. And looked at the curriculum, and I brought new materials every, you know, every week I'd bring in something new so the kids would get excited about that. And they loved it. So for me, it was just creating a program where my child was engaged and enjoying it and having fun and looking forward to the day. So that's where it came about, when I just realized that I can't have her sitting in daycare or with a sitter just watching TV.
So how did you grow beyond the two children, your daughter and your babysitter's child, to creating a program for other families?
A great question. What happened was the kids learned their letter sounds and reading, pre-reading skills so quickly that they started reading, and they were only 3 years old. Mm-hmm. So all of our friends and families nearby, neighbors, started paying attention, and then they started, you know, signing up, just saying, hey, can we be part of this? And then I thought, well, wait a second, they can. If we added one or two, I didn't want to create a business. I didn't want to open up a daycare center. I just wanted something for my daughter. Mm-hmm. But she enjoyed playing with this other girl, and I thought it'd be great to have 2 or 3 other kids. So we had a total of 4 children and invited the other children to join. And I figured if I charged a small tuition to cover the expenses, they would pay for the teacher and the teacher's benefits, and it would be free to me. And that's when the wheel started turning. I started thinking, this is amazing. I can actually have a program that's perfect for my daughter, something that I actually put together. So I, you know, of course I love it. And if I didn't like it, I can change it and it would all be free. Mm-hmm. And that concept was really exciting. And the nice thing about that is it was free. And so mm-hmm. I was able to work and not worry about that. And nobody believed me, believe it or not, because my husband had a really great, he owned his own company, and, mm-hmm. and he was, you know, in terms of finances, he was in really good shape. And they just thought, oh, Susan was able to hire a nanny and, their own program. She's got all this stuff provided for her, and this is great. And I kept telling people, no, this is completely free. It doesn't cost us a penny. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wrote the book, because a lot of friends of mine were in a position where they could really benefit from this. Mm-hmm. And I laid it out with all the forms, and that's where they looked at that and said, wow, this really is free. Mm-hmm. And that's when it really took off for me. First, it was just like creating my own program so my child would be happy. Mm-hmm. Second, it was inviting other kids, hiring a teacher, making it break even, or you can even make money if you wanted to bring in more children. But I just wanted it to break even, mm-hmm. and it worked perfectly. And that's when I thought, this is something that all mothers can benefit from. All parents can benefit from this. Mm-hmm. And that's when this whole concept just ballooned.
Well, I'm wondering, at what threshold does a program like this become something that needs to be registered, or there needs to be some sort of certification? How does that work?
Most states require that you have a licensed daycare mm-hmm. to run a program like this. So mm-hmm. you do have to go through the process. It's called a family. Well, it's different in different states. In California, it's called a family daycare licensing program, and you can be licensed for 6 up to 12 kids.
Okay.
And it's really easy to do. I mean, it's just basically having safety locks on all your cabinets, keeping all of your cleaning supplies and any kind of chemical, of course, weapons and guns all locked up, mm-hmm. and then having things like smoke detectors and fire extinguishers.
Okay.
So it's pretty basic, mm-hmm. and I was able to do it in one day. You know, I just went and I got more latches and laid it all out and put everything in, and it was, you know, and I had it was called a family daycare licensing back then, mm-hmm. and they came out and licensed, and it was fine. And they come out every year to check to make sure everything's okay and safe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty easy to do, and it's nominal in terms of cost. I think it's like $120 a year.
And so, were you able to, did you need to do that when it was just 2 children, or was it like as you reached maybe 6 or something that you had to take those steps?
I actually didn't take those steps to start with because I didn't even know that was necessary.
Sure.
But but when I figured it out, I went ahead and got the licensing because I said, oh, what is that? What do you mean I need to get a license just to have another child play with my daughter?
Okay.
But once you start asking for tuition, then you do need to get licensed. And it's just a good thing to do because you can advertise that way and people mm-hmm. will be more inclined to enroll their kids in your program if they don't know you.
Okay. All right. So you talked a bit about balancing the academics with play, with developmental. Let's talk about the benefits of, you know, the academic model versus, you know, a purely developmental model for a daycare program.
Okay, that's a pretty controversial issue. So looking at academics, and I kind of lean the academic direction just because I'm a teacher and an educator,
mm-hmm.
The academic program does require that kids sit still. You know, they have to sit at a table and hold a pencil to write, and they're reading books, and they're learning letter sounds and doing science and math and academic activities. So it does require a little bit of maturity, and some kids just don't do well with that, especially when you're looking at 2 to 5-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting behind a desk can be kind of difficult. So there's that criticism of the program. And those kids would benefit more from more of a developmental program where they would have gymnastics and play baseball and bowling, and they'd be out there using their large motor skills and being outside more. What I did was combine the two. So mm-hmm. I don't think that it's really a thing where you have to choose one way or the other. And if you do choose one mm-hmm. developmental or academic, you're going to get a lot of criticism from the other camps. You know, they're going to look at that and say, well, you know, why do developmental when your kid's going to start school and they're not going to have any academic skills? They're going to fall behind. So there's that criticism. And then the other end for the academic side, they just say, what about these poor kids who need to go out there and exercise and sing and dance and move?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's important to create a balance. And because the kids at this age have such a short attention span, mm-hmm. it's really easy to weave the two together. Mm-hmm. So I would have the kids sit together, and they would sit on the floor and play with big letters, plastic letters, and they'd touch it and feel it, and we'd say, this is an A, and an A makes 3 sounds, and the kids mm-hmm. would say, ah, A, ah, and they would learn all the sounds, and we taught them blends and in different letter combinations, like phonograms, so the kids would see the T-I-O-N. And at 3 years old, they know that that makes a shun sound, mm-hmm. you know, because if you try to get a child to look at T-I-O-N and they try to sound it out, mm-hmm. how do you sound out T-I-O-N? You can't, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's just giving them the tools, and they can learn those tools. And I was a little surprised because I am not an early child education teacher. You know, mm-hmm. I was trained for elementary mm-hmm. school back in the day, and I didn't know if the kids would pick up on it. I thought, well, maybe they're not developmentally ready to learn these skills. And the teacher would look at the curriculum I laid out, and I've got that in the book, just like a curriculum framework for Monday through Friday, mm-hmm. and she'd write notes, and I'd say, well, teach them this three sounds that the A makes. And then, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, she'd say, well, they've got that. What do we do next? You know? Mm-hmm. And then, like, 3 or 4 months, the kids had all the letter sounds down. And I was really surprised. I didn't expect them to get it that quickly. Mm-hmm. So they were learning to read, and they were doing math, and having these, you know, 6-7-year-old skills in terms of academics in 3 or 4 months. And I was really surprised, and I just kept saying, okay, well, and they loved it. You know, I said, well, are they enjoying it? And she said, of course, they love it. And even then we started bringing up the maps of the world and maps of the United States, and mm-hmm. they knew all the states and the capitals and mm-hmm. what each state was famous for, you know, and right. it was just shocking to me that they got it, and they loved it. It wasn't like they were being forced to memorize these things. It was just part of the game that they played, and we have lots of games, and everything's a game. You know, mm-hmm. they would bring in new games, and they would play with the games and learn how to think globally like mm-hmm. that. We'd say, well, you know, here's Colorado. What is Colorado known for? You know, or mm-hmm. here's Washington, D.C. That's our capital of the nation, you know, and then we would travel. So the kids would travel. We did a lot of traveling and mm-hmm. going to museums and making it exciting. So it's real. The nice thing is the parent gets to choose what they want for their child. So
right.
they get to say how much of this, cause maybe 20% would be academics and the rest would be developmental, or mm-hmm. it can all be outside. It can be, everything can be outside, and they can just come in for a few minutes to just do, you know, just really basic skills and put that into their curriculum. So mm-hmm. for the parent, they can choose what they want. They can also hire who they want.
Sure.
So that way they bring in different talent. And I realized that made a huge difference. When you've got somebody who is passionate about something, they're going to share it with the kids, and it's impossible to keep it away from them. I had a teacher who was a musical theater student in a community college here in Santa Cruz, and he came in just singing and dancing, and then he had them do the Lorax when they were 2 years old for the young group and 6 years old for the older group.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fabulous, you know, and I was shocked that they can memorize their lines and they can go out there and sing and dance mm-hmm. and understand the blocking involved, and they loved it, and that became the beginning of their creative side. So they went on to do 4 or 5 plays with this particular director,
mm-hmm.
and then they continued for another 4 or 5 years with professional directors and going into musical theater
yeah.
by the time they got to middle school.
Well, now we talked a bit, so you described a lot of possibilities in terms of activities and things that the children could be doing during the day in the program. Another daunting area, I think, might be for parents to figure out where to get the best resources, and they want to make sure that they're providing the right things so that their children will hit the ground running when they enroll in school for kindergarten. So let's talk a little about the resources, like where they can find those.
Okay, I actually created a whole curriculum for 18 months, 24 months, 30 months, 3-year, 4-year, and 5-year-old children.
Mm-hmm.
And I've laid it out and divided it into reading, math, science, social skills, Spanish or some foreign language, art, and physical ed. And I lay out the whole entire framework. And that's available on our website. So if you go to meritworld.com mm-hmm. and go to shop,
mm-hmm.
In there we've got laid out the whole entire curriculum for the preschool program.
Mm-hmm.
It actually goes preschool from 18 months all the way to 12th grade.
Hmm.
I've laid out the framework to build skills, and I did that when my daughter was born, because I realized that she would be, you know, going to school, and I'm thinking, well, how can I make sure that when she was 18 years old, she'd be able to go off to Stanford, which is where she went, and be successful and be confident and have the skills to be to enjoy the college and not feel like, oh, I got here, but now what do I do because I can't keep up? I wanted her to be able to hold her head up and be,
mm-hmm.
be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I started at 18 years old, and then I went backwards. And I realized I needed to start at 18 months to prepare the kids, mm-hmm. all the kids in our program, so that they would be able to have that running start all the way through and not hit any critical mass as they get there. So she was able to build the skills and, you know, learn to read and write and do research and write research papers and go out and start businesses and do projects like Project Merit and have all of that done by the time she starts 12th grade so that she can apply to colleges mm-hmm. and be in a position where she can stand on her own two feet and be and get in, which is exactly what happened. She got accepted to every college she applied to. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was because we started her young and she was always top of her class. She always went into the next grade just, you know, having the skills and being confident and feeling good about who she is. And then that, you know, instills more confidence and makes you want to go out and learn more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I do have the curriculum. It's available. It's broken down. It's really, and I list all the materials and what the teacher should teach and where to buy the materials. Everything's already in the curriculum. I also find, I just mentioned this before, but I think it's really important to find the right teachers. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to get a credentialed teacher to teach the program. It's really finding somebody who has a passion that's aligned with your children. Mm-hmm. If you've got a child who really likes to be outside and digging and in the mud and making a mess, pull in the paleontologists. Mm-hmm. And we did that with our students. And they went nuts over this. We actually found a dig site right on our property. Mm-hmm. And the kids got professional archaeological tools. And they went out there and they started doing digs and understanding how to protect the earth so mm-hmm. that they can unearth the little fossils that they found. But they found 5 to 8 million-year-old fossils, like little hooves mm-hmm. and a lot of sea life and stuff like that. So it was really exciting for them. But mm-hmm. it all came from this one teacher. And he was actually a graduate student at the local university. And he would come after school and he would work with the kids for 2 hours every day. And they would be so excited to say, when is Christopher going to get here? And he would take them outside and they'd go running up the hill and they'd all be searching for these fossils. And they did this for years, like 2 or 3 years of just really being engaged. For all the holidays, like for Christmas, they would ask for paleontology tools. Mm-hmm. But I had no interest in paleontology myself. Never interested me. So my kids would have never gotten these fossils are sitting right in my backyard. I wouldn't have even noticed them. I would have thought it was a snail or something.
Right.
So it was just exciting that we had that. Just like with the musical theater person. I mean, he came in and just completely turned their worlds where they both went into competition dance mm-hmm. in high school, and they danced with a competition team here. They would have never gotten that from me, because I don't dance. I can barely, whistle. I have no skills like that.
So I'm wondering. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
I was because I was able to find these people with these unique skills that I don't have, that I thought would be interesting to see whether they would like it. Mm-hmm. It opened doors for them to explore areas that they wouldn't have had with just me and my husband mm-hmm. as parents.
Right, right. So I'm wondering, do you find that parents who are homeschooling also use your curriculum or reach out to you for guidance just for homeschooling their school-aged children?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of that's where most of the people come from. They usually look for the curriculum around 5-year-old, for kindergarten through about 3rd or 4th grade, because that's a big homeschooling community at that age.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they like what we have. And because we're a private school, Merit Academy is a private school. We teach all of our classes one-on-one. The cost is pretty expensive. It's almost the same cost as a college education. So mm-hmm. people, not everybody can afford it. And that's why I love having the curriculum available, because that way anybody can use it and they can get a Merit Academy education. So a lot mm-hmm. of the parents look at this and say, wow, this is great. And then they copy it. They even take the field trips that mm-hmm. that we take. Mm-hmm. As the kids get older, the kids do a lot of international travel and they go to different places. And people love just purchasing that just to get the curriculum to see what they need to do for the whole year to prepare the kids for a trip to, for instance, like the medieval Germany to be able to go on the midnight watchman's tour in Rutenberg and just doing exciting things like that. So they give the kids something to look forward to. So yes, people do like the curriculum, and typically most of the people that come to Merit for the curriculum are going to be homeschoolers.
Now, do you provide support for families who are any sort of, and I mean support in terms of consultation or things like that, where there may be families that are really, they take this book, they really take it to heart, and they're trying to implement, but they have some questions or they just need some extra assistance in getting it off the ground. Do you offer services like that?
Yes, yes. We do consultations. So we have parents that call us and we work with them on an hourly basis. So they give us a list of questions and we help them understand what they're dealing with. And usually it's one of two things. It's either setting up the program where they're trying to figure out, you know, I live in a two-bedroom apartment. How do I make room for this program? Mm-hmm. Or they want to, so we convert rooms. So what I do is I'll say, okay, well, do you have a guest bedroom or your living room? Even your living room during the day, it's mm-hmm. now your preschool. At mm-hmm. night, it's your family room or your living room. And mm-hmm. here's how we can transform the room. And I've actually designed furniture for them, and they've had furniture built, or they purchased something similar to what I've laid out in the design. Mm-hmm. And that way, all the materials go up high so the kids can't touch it during the night. So they get excited during the day. It's like, oh, school time, let's go do this. And they get excited, and it's because it's their home. You know, so you don't want them to feel like, oh, it's the same thing here, night and day. Mm-hmm. You want to kind of open it up so they're excited. Mm-hmm. And so we do. So I do a lot of preliminary work just laying out the physical environment, because people will come and check out your home to see where their kids are going to go to preschool. So you sure. want to make sure it looks nice and it's exciting. Mm-hmm. And then also helping them select their teachers. You know, how do you hire and find, you know, how do you find these great teachers? And then, of course, looking at the curriculum, which we just talked about. So just looking at what curriculum is important to you, laying it out and figuring out what kind of balance will be good for your children, but also good for other children and other families when they look at your program. You know, what are people looking for? And mm-hmm. make sure that you've got some of those really exciting activities in your program so that people will want to come to your school or to
Absolutely.
Your program, your preschool.
Well, I want to remind our listeners that you're tuned in to WOLB 1010 AM, and this is Parenting 411. This is Carol Mileta, and I am talking with Susan Tatsui Darcy, and she is an educator, an author, a consultant, and we're talking about her book, The Millennial's Guide to Free Child Care in Your Home. If you would like to learn more about Susan as we're speaking, visit her website at www.meritworld.com. That's one word, MERITWORLD.com. So now I want to ask, what are the areas that parents find the most challenging when they're really trying to implement this idea in their home? What are the common areas that present challenges for them?
Probably trying to be friends with the families. Although that sounds counterintuitive, like you're thinking, well, if I've got two or three children and families involved in my preschool, I'm going to want to be friends with them. Of course, we can all be, you know, collaborate together, and it can be a joint effort, and it'll be fun for everybody. I find that in those situations, a lot of the families get into trouble because they think they're friends, but the problem is the friends start taking advantage of them. You know, so you might say, pick my, you know, the program ends at 6, and they're supposed to all pick their kids up at 6, and most daycare programs have a policy that if you're a minute late, you pay $1. If you're 5 minutes late, you pay $5. But it's your friend. You know, so you're thinking, oh, don't worry about it. You can be 5 minutes late, and the next week it's 20 minutes late. And then the week after, they're saying, hey, I'm going to go to dinner with some of my friends. Do you mind hanging on to them till like 8 o'clock tonight? And then the host family feels like they're being taken advantage of, which they are. Sure. And it's really hard to delineate what is friendship and what is your program. And when I work with parents, when they, you know, they consult me and they say, hey, what do I do because we've got this big problem? I say, well, let's create a policy manual. And everybody signs the policy manual, and it's not like you're pointing to one particular family, say, this is for you. We're making a rule because you've abused it. If you start your program with a policy manual by saying, here are our hours. You need to pack your own lunch. You need to, you know, bring your own sweaters, you know, whatever it is that it's important to you, just lay it all out. They sign it so they understand the rules before you get started, and that tends to alleviate a lot of the problems that most of the parents come to when they come to me. The ones that try to be friendly and just say, oh, it's really low-key, not big deal. We'll just have two of my best friends or my kids play with these other kids at gymnastics. They're going to come join the program. They're going to give me a couple hundred dollars. Or they're going to pay the teacher directly. And then you get all kinds of problems happening because then, you know, you've got parents trying to talk to the teacher and they're trying to, you know, control what happens with the curriculum.
And oh, wow.
Then it becomes a nightmare. Yeah, so those are the kinds of problems I've seen. And I typically I'll just say things like, read the book, you know, because I discuss this in the book. You want to have a policy manual. You want to have rules. You want to have forms they find, they read and they sign.
Mm-hmm.
And if their kid's sick, they don't bring their sick kid to your program, just like they wouldn't to another daycare. So they're not taking advantage of you and your children.
Mm-hmm.
So that tends to be one of the big, big problems I find.
Mm, wow. And so what are you hearing from mothers and families who have established the in-home daycare using this model? What are they saying?
They love it. Because the amazing part is it's free. And mm-hmm. that really blows people away. Just like you mentioned at the beginning of our interview today, that people are spending $1,000 a month. They're spending over 50% of their paycheck on daycare if they've got two children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not sustainable. You can't do that. And that's why there's a lot of mothers that have to stay home. And when they stay home, they're giving up their, you know, it's usually the mother that stays home.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother's giving up her future. She's not getting her college degree. She's mm-hmm. not moving up the corporate ladder at work.
Mm-hmm.
She is staying at home and doing a job that, of course, she loves her children, but she's not getting paid to do that. So she doesn't have any extra funds. So she's really strapped in this position until the kids are old enough to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not fair. It doesn't give her a chance to really develop who she is
mm-hmm.
and what she needs to. And that's why I really love this, is if it gives kids, a lot of mothers go back to college. Like, I'm working with several right now who are going back to college, getting their degree while their kids are in a program at their home, and they're living in apartments. So it's small mm-hmm. apartments, and they've got two kids coming in, but they have free childcare, which means they can afford to go to a community college and start building their academic transcripts so they can actually go off and have a professional career at any time and not be stuck in, you know, possibly abusive relationships. You know,
mm-hmm.
they may be in a relationship where they can't leave. They know they can't leave because they can't go get a job and support their children and themselves because they don't have any experience or any form of income.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I didn't mention earlier that mm-hmm. is really ideal about this whole free child care in your home is that you choose the hours. You choose your people that are working, the people that you're hiring as teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did, because I have two children, I have one that was four and one when we had an infant, Jacqueline was an infant, we
mm-hmm.
invited one other child as an infant. And then for Nicole, my four-year-old, we invited three other kids, so she had four kids in her program.
Mm-hmm.
But we had two teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I staggered their start time. So I had somebody arrive at 7 a.m., and she would actually come in and make breakfast,
mm-hmm.
throw the laundry in,
mm-hmm.
and get the kids ready for school, so or for our program,
sure.
so that I can get dressed myself. Because with my infant, she wanted to be held all the time. So
right.
taking a shower was really difficult, because I'd have to leave the shower door open, because if she didn't see me, she would scream bloody murder. So I just had, you know, Michelle, my teacher at the time, to say, just come, hold her. She's going to scream and yell, but just hold her for, you know, just give me 10 minutes so I can get a shower.
Mm.
And that way I can get dressed quickly. And
right.
that was a benefit, because I had her come an hour before the other kids got here.
Mm-hmm.
So she was able to help me with getting everything started. And at the end of the day, Benjamin, the teacher for the older kids, would stay an hour afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, he would fold the laundry, put it in our drawers. He'd run a vacuum through the whole house. It was light housekeeping. He wasn't doing heavy housekeeping.
Sure.
But he made dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And he set the table, and he put a little note saying, this is in the oven. Don't forget the dressings in the refrigerator.
Right.
And I would come home and just say, wow. You know, and then my kids would be thrilled to see me and be like, what? This is so exciting. And we'd sit down to dinner and see what was made for the day. And, of course, I gave him recipes, because when he first started working for me, mm-hmm. I asked him if he knew how to cook. And he says, I don't know how to boil water.
Wow. Okay.
And, yeah, that's what I said. I said, you're in college and you can't boil water? He says, no. He goes, I can read. And I said, okay, what does that mean? And he said, well, if you have recipes, he says, I can figure it out and you can just kind of show me. Because
mm-hmm.
he was really pitching me for the job.
Sure.
And I did. And I gave him my best recipes, and he would make, you know, blue cheese dressing, and he'd make all my favorite sauces,
uh-huh.
and he'd create all these amazing meals, and it was exactly the way I wanted it. You know, so we got the food that we wanted, and we didn't have to cook, and we didn't have to clean, and that was all part of this program. So when parents figured this out, you know, the parents after they get the curriculum together and they get their program set up and they realize, oh, they can come a half hour, an hour early, and I can get all of these benefits.
Sure.
And if you charge a little bit more for your tuition, it's still free. So for me, I ran the program for 9 years.
Wow.
And it was free, and I had my house cleaned. I had all meals prepped. And sometimes if I were going to be late, I'd just say, can you stay? Can you give the kids a bath? You know, and get them all set up. So when I come in the door, I can actually sit down and read and enjoy being with them. And it worked out really, really well. So these parents who do this program, when they discover all the different benefits of free child care in your home, they're blown away, you know, because if you look at what they used to do, which is, you know, borrowing from everybody they know and asking grandma and aunts and uncles and mother-in-laws to babysit, getting substandard care, because you can't really tell them how to do things. You can't tell them, here, I want you to read to them, and don't forget to do that science experiment, and I want them to be really great at soccer, so can you teach them how to kick that ball?
Right.
You're lucky to have them just show up, right? So it's a totally different world, and people don't understand that. And that's why I wrote the book, because I felt that it can really change people's lives. And in a day when child care is just really ravaging our income and so much uncertainty, the last thing we need to do is not be able to promote ourselves and be able to go out and get the careers we want. This is a great solution.
Well, I have to tell you, I was a stay-at-home mom when my children were young. And Susan, you wrote the brilliant wedding planning guide for busy women, and coincidentally I read that book and used that book. Where was this book when my children were young? But the interesting thing about the book, though, is even if I had not started free child care in my home, I still found that there was a wealth of information in here for anyone that has a caregiver in the home, however you do it. Because, I mean, a lot of these things that you have in here, the application form for hiring, the scheduling, the timesheet, and figuring out how to manage the pay and all of that, those are all things that I had to create and I had to make. And really, a book like this is just so useful. It's obviously the blueprint for free child care in your home, but it also has just a wealth of information that parents can use for other ways that they choose to provide child care in their home. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Like you said, you were a stay-at-home mom, and yet you needed a babysitter. You weren't a stay-at-home mom 24/7, you know. So you really did need to be able to supply, be able to get away. And when you got away, somebody had to come into your home. So you had to hire somebody. You had to figure out what they were going to do, help them figure out what the kids are going to eat, what the rules are.
Right,
and it requires everything we're talking about here.
Right, because for a time I had started, shortly after I came home with them, I started a small marketing consulting company. And so I did have a nanny and all of this, and that's where I had to create all of this stuff that you have right here in the book. So that's phenomenal. Do you hear from families that use your book as a resource in that way?
Yes. Yes, a lot of parents just use the forms, like the child care application, the teacher application form, just because, you know, I've done this for so many years that I've thought of every possible question, and they like it because they can just send it off and then people fill it out and they can check resources, and it just makes their job easier, and they feel more confident knowing that the decisions they're making to do it in-house, you know, hiring themselves, you know, hiring their child care, even babysitters, just to do it in-house as opposed to paying the outrageous rates that you have to pay if you go to services. It makes it easier for them.
Right. So now let's talk about something else that moms deal with when figuring out how their child is going to be cared for while they work. And that is the whole mommy guilt, first of all, feeling bad that they're even leaving their child, even after they set up this wonderful program in their home. They feel bad about leaving. And then also that jealousy that can come up where they just kind of are jealous of the caregiver and the time and the moments that the caregiver is able to spend with their child while they're away.
Yeah, that's the tough part. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Figuring out how to deal with mommy guilt, because in our society, you know, good moms stay home with their kids, and it's difficult to get around that. The way I did is the way I got around the mommy guilt is I felt that everything that happened with my kids when I come home and they'd say, look what I just did. I had so much fun with Michelle and so much fun with Benjamin. And instead of feeling like, oh, they didn't say that about me, and and I'm leaving them alone in both the jealousy and the guilt, I embraced it because I'm thinking they are talking about things that I designed for them. You know, so it was us. It was the teamwork. Mm-hmm. We are a team. Mm-hmm. The caregivers and my husband and I were all a team, and it was because of all of us that my kids were able to come and show us their great drawings and the things they learned, and look at, I can read this book now, and they'd be so proud and show us what they just learned that day. And the teachers would be standing there just beaming, and I'm looking at it like, it's working, you know, and being so happy that everything that I was hoping would happen is actually happening. And it does take a big person, though, because otherwise you kind of look at them and think, wow, it was them. They're the ones that did that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's your own program, you can take pride in that. So that's why I feel like it's a little bit different than if you sent your child off to a creme de la creme preschool, you know, and you mm-hmm. pick them up and you're thinking, wow, they could have done, they did it without me. I had nothing to do with this. I paid the fees and my kids went off and did this. Whether it's good or bad, the other school is responsible. But when you have your own in-home daycare program or preschool program, you're laying it all out. You're talking mm-hmm. to the teacher every day, every week. You know, every week I would lay out the new curriculum
mm-hmm.
and discuss with them, because they would actually fill in the little, you know, in the little forms in the book. They would say, so-and-so, Joey really liked this, and so-and-so, you know, Brittany didn't do well with this. You know, she had a tantrum over this one. You know, so I'm just looking at that thing. Okay, with this group, how do I create the next week's curriculum
mm-hmm.
that would work? And I would do that with the teacher, of course, because the teacher is the one who implements it. And I would sit down with the teacher and say, what do you think about this? Should we do 15 minutes or 20 minutes or 5 minutes? Or should we just forget this for a week? This isn't working, and mm-hmm. just try something different. We mm-hmm. need new materials, new games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we would work as a team. And that mm-hmm. way, when the kids came back with successes, I was part of that. And when it didn't work, I was still part of that. So it was mm-hmm. the guilt. I didn't feel like I really had that guilt
mm-hmm.
because I felt like I was part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of raising them, I wasn't just dropping them off somewhere and just hoping for the best or hoping the big paycheck, I mean, a big tuition check would cover, you mm-hmm. know, all the problems, which it doesn't, you know, mm-hmm. so.
Now, you mentioned something earlier about having run this for 9 years. So did your daughters not go to public or an outside private school during that time? Or was it more of an aftercare? Did it transform into an aftercare sort of program? Where were they educated primarily for those 9 years?
So for Nicole, my oldest, she was started here at 2.5, and then she continued to go until she was 5 years old in our program here, the preschool program, every
mm-hmm.
day.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went to a local private school
okay.
For kindergarten through third grade.
Mm.
And then Jacqueline, my youngest one, started off with the 18-month program, you know, so she started even younger than Nicole did, and she stayed all the way till she was 5. And then when she was when she was 5, she started Merit Academy, which is our school. So
after
each child became kindergarten age, they did an after-school program. So I had mm-hmm. the teacher of the program would pick the kids up at all their respective schools all over town,
mm-hmm.
bring them back to my place, and then I had the teacher, like the paleontologist or mm-hmm. The musical theater director. I had different teachers, different days, and they would pick the kids up, and they would spend, you know, between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. doing what they call the after-school enrichment program. And that consisted of homework when the kids got a little bit older, so they did a little bit of the homework so the parents didn't have to deal with homework when they got home. They got to spend more time with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also included really fun activities. And I had to really think about that because I wanted to make sure that they didn't feel like it was just more school after school. So we made it very exciting, and you got them outside to do activities, but, you know, critical thinking and teamwork and just having fun after school. And that was part of the program. So for 9 years, I was able to run all of those programs, and it didn't cost me a penny, including the pickup and drop off and all of that for all the kids, because it was included in the tuition.
Well, that should be exciting for any families listening, because that's something that they can do as well. I mean, certainly after the children enter school, child care costs decrease, but there's still a need to have activities for them for after school. So it's good to know that your model kind of shows them how to do that as well, and continue it on until, I guess, they transition into something else. The children are older and have other interests or whatever after that time. So that's pretty good. Now, let's talk about what's next for you. What are you going to be doing?
Well, I'm still working with parents, so I love this part, is working with the parents and helping them develop the program for their kids and troubleshooting issues and helping them rewrite policy manuals and also just stepping in. So I do a lot of consulting for that. I also do the Project Merit, so I help kids choose projects that help them get into college. So those are big things I'm still working on. But one of the things I'm thinking of doing that kind of ties into child care is elder care. And you just mentioned that also, is that parents are kind of sandwiched in between their parents who are getting older and needing, you know, more services. They're not as graceful, and their health is becoming problems, and they need more doctor visits, and they need to make sure their house is safe for them so they're not going to get hurt at home. So they're worrying about the parents and what it's going to cost to take care of their parents, while at the same time taking care of child care, looking at, you know, their babies, especially if they've got young kids, because then they're going to be paying for 100% of their child care until their children are 5 years old, and 100% of their parents' care. And elder care is a huge issue. So I've been really examining that and looking at families that have to deal with choosing, you know, what kinds of
support services or...
Yeah, services and also in-home services, looking at whether or not they can actually have their moms or dads living with them and have their toddlers, which kind of works out well because they can play together, but as long as you've got somebody orchestrating it. Or if you're going to pay for these outside services, and the outside services are really, really expensive. And then when they become non-ambulatory and they've got need help or become sick and they need to actually go to, you know, a facility. Then it gets really, really expensive. So I've actually laid out a book similar to the child care book that lays out how to create elder care in your home, where you bring in one other person and you hire somebody to handle both or three people, and then they do genealogy and they do really fun activities. What do people care about when they're older? They love their memories, their photo albums, and to be able to. So I've laid out a whole program where they can have their photo albums and have a video camera taping their entire story. So they start at the beginning and say, oh, I got married here. And then, you know, the person would be asking questions about, well, who was at the wedding, and where was the wedding, and what was going on in the world at the time, and who was president, you know, just kind of getting all these other great information. But it's a story directly from the person. And while they're still able to tell these stories, the families can benefit from that. And I'm thinking that I bet families would be really interested in dropping their you know, parent off at elder care and having a service like that, where at the end of the day, here's your tape from, you know, 1929 or something, you know, what was going on back then. And then every week having a new tape based on the photo albums that they bring for memories and stuff like that. So I'm thinking if we make a really exciting program for elders, then we can avoid the $50,000 to $75,000 per year that you have to pay for your parent to go into these facilities that nobody has. Who's got an extra $75,000?
Right.
And they've also got to pay, you know, similar tuition for their children. I mean, that's $300,000. No, people are not going to have that kind of money. So we've got to be creative, and I'm finding that there's a lot of interest. I've talked to people
who are
currently dealing with this, and and the problems that they come across because of the hassles with siblings in terms of who's paying for this, who's putting more time into this. You know, one child is working harder and doing all the work because they happen to live close by, and that creates angst and problems in the family. How can we avoid that? So I'm gathering details and research and finding, you know, just different. I don't have a solution. I'm just looking at what's out there and thinking that, this might be a new book.
I absolutely think it's a new book. I'm just sitting here wondering, when is she going to come out with that? I mean, because I tell you, that's something I would like to look at on Parenting 411 as well, because as you talked about, we've got the sandwich generation. So, you know, where families are still raising children, even if they're not young children, they could be teenagers or whatever, and at the same time beginning to take on some of the care for their parents. So it's difficult. And I can imagine, I mean, if you lay out that book the way you did with this, I think it will really ease the minds of a lot of adult children who find themselves in this situation right now of trying to figure out the best and most loving way and practical way to care for their older parents. So that sounds really exciting.
I agree. I think it's an issue that we're all going to face, and it's something that we need to address. And if we can do this jointly with other families and find ways to do it in an affordable, like you said, and a humane way to do this, a respectful way, I think this is going to, it can revolutionize the way we look at elder care.
Right, absolutely. So I've seen that you've been making the circuit, I tell you, talking about your book, the College Game, Beating the College Game. Do you have any more speaking engagements coming up?
Yes, I do. It seems like every week I get two or three invites to speak about the college admissions scandal and what it takes to get your child into college, because it seems to be, especially this time of year when kids are applying to colleges and they know they don't have a shot at it, they're thinking, well, what can I do for my other child, you know, that is, you know, a sophomore or a freshman in high school, what can they do to position themselves to be able to get into the colleges, their dream colleges, but also to get scholarship dollars, because, again, you know, looking at the finances, that's why, you know, for the free childcare book, I tell parents that, you know, if you've got your kid doing sports and they're playing, you know, instruments, and they think that that's going to be their ticket in for full ride scholarships, they're going to have something new coming. And it's really something where they need to present the student needs to present themselves as a viable, resourceful, wonderful student who can go out in the world and make a difference. You know, looking at all the things going on in the world, colleges want these students who are out there who don't just have ideas and just sit back and play video games all day. They want to get kids who have an idea and turn it into a project and actually complete it. That makes them stand out. So I'm finding that is the ticket. And that's why I'm getting so many requests for interviews. I don't know.
Well, now I'll share a little bit about what's going on at the Parenting 411. We will be hosting a back-to-school parenting forum on Saturday, September 14th at Shepherd Park Public Library in Washington, D.C. I am doing that in my role as the 2019 D.C. Mother of the Year in partnership with the D.C. Metro Area Association of American Mothers Incorporated. And I again invite listeners to learn more about this organization at www.americanmothers.org. And the Back to School Parenting Forum is free. And I've got some awesome, awesome speakers coming to talk. And you've heard from some of them right here on Parenting 411. I have Caroline Brewer, who is the literacy expert. She will be talking about reading and helping to build strong readers. I also have Dr. Mildred Payton, who is America's bullying expert. She will talk about that as well. And I will also have Dr. Linda McGee, who you know as the host of Good Mental Health. She's also part of Team Radio Baltimore. She will be talking about helping children to manage stress. Because, you know, with back to school, we focus a lot on getting the backpacks, getting the clothes, getting the sports gear and all of those things, which are certainly important. And but there are some other things, too, that come along with back to school that we want to kind of get ahead of and make sure that parents have the tools to help their children manage. So I'm really looking forward to it. Again, it's on Saturday, September 14th. You can also look up the Back to School Parenting Forum on, Back to School Parent Forum on Eventbrite. And again, it will be at Shepherd Park Public Library in Washington, D.C. My show on September 13th will look at college costs and how families can cover those costs. They are escalating rapidly, and parents really are wondering how to get this done. They want to provide higher education for their children. So we're going to talk to someone who really knows how to do that. I also want to point out that we are still accepting nominations for Mother of the Year through September 15th. So again, I urge you to visit AmericanMothers.org. It only takes, 5 minutes, Susan, to nominate someone?
Yeah, that's right.
You want to do that, and it can be husbands can nominate their wives, you can nominate your friends, you can nominate your sister, you can nominate your mother, but it is an incredible honor. I think Susan and I can both attest to the special feeling that we had once we were nominated, and then just attending the convention and meeting mothers from all over the country and just connecting with them. It was an amazing experience, and it would be wonderful if you could provide that for another mother in your life. And finally, I want to encourage fifth graders. I want you to reach out to fifth graders that you know and encourage them to enter the nation's fifth grade essay contest. It runs from August 15th through December 15th. And the theme is What My Mother Means to Me. And again, you can visit AmericanMothers.org/essay contest. I hope that you will reach out to and encourage fifth graders to do that. It's really wonderful. It will really make some mom's day. We enjoyed meeting the essay winner last year when we attended the convention. So I hope that you will do that. I hope that you will visit my website, carolmaletta.com. In case you were not able to hear the whole show in its entirety, I will be putting it up on the website. And I hope that you will tune in next month when I'm talking about college costs. And Susan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter. But I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains. We gon' walk it out and move.